time for the BizNews Breakfast Briefing. I'm Alec Hogg, and with me, my executive producer, Lucy Ferreira.
Good morning, Alec.
To kick off with, do you want to take us through the main headlines of the markets?
So the S&P 500 index is down 0.1% to 4,207. The NASDAQ composite down 0.6% at 12,779. Looking at the JSE All Share Index, that's up 2.2%, Alec, to 71,265. Rand versus the dollar, down 4 cents, versus the pound, down 5, and the euro, down 9 cents. Brent crude is up 185 cents to just under $100 a barrel. And looking at the gold price, we're sitting at $4 up to $1,790. And Bitcoin, down 1.3% to $23,979. And lastly, the Geltec basket, which we follow, is up 2%.
I wanted to just dwell a little bit on the Rand dollar. The Rand started the week nearly 17 Rand to the US dollar. And we're trading at the moment, as you can see there, at 16.24. It's been quite extraordinary the way that the markets have moved and can move that quickly. Imagine if you're an importer, and you decided that you would pay for your product, whatever you were importing at the beginning of the week. Well, if you just waited, you would have got it quite a lot. You'd have to kind of pick it up a lot cheaper now. It would only cost you 16 Rand 25, whereas you'd be paying 17 Rand for every dollar that you bought a week ago.
Exactly, Alec. And it really does speak to the perils of FX trading in general and the volatility that we're seeing all over the markets that generally do have investors very uncertain and scared.
Bitcoin, you mentioned that. It's had a gangbusters week, hasn't it? So it started off in May and June over $32,000 a Bitcoin. Came all the way back to 20,000. And I recall that there were quite a few technical analysts who said that if it dropped below $20,000, watch out, it could actually go, they didn't say to zero, but it could go a lot lower. But it's recovered well. Confidence coming back in the crypto.
That's exactly it. It seems to have found its floor, and that those analysts were, I suppose, on the money. And it again speaks to all of the questions that people always have. Are we going to see more extreme volatility? Can it ever go to zero? Most believe no. It's fascinating to watch, if nothing else.
Okay, let me take you through the US markets, Lucy. And on that side, it was an interesting evening. There wasn't really that much of a move. The S&P 500 down just slightly, and the NASDAQ down by about 0.5%. The rally that we've had on these two markets in the last few days has been quite sensational. And it kind of ran out of steam, perhaps. Investors catching their breath after those very, very big increases. And had it been at a different time, we might have seen another strong rally yesterday because the producer price index came out overnight. Now, you will recall that for July, the consumer price index was at 8.5% in America, and that was down from the peak of June of 9.1%. Well, the producer price index, which is, if you like, the price at the factory gate, that grew by 9.8% in July from 11.3% in June. So another indication that interest rates might not have to be accelerated or increased that quickly in the United States. And that is good news all around the world. The 9.8% for July of producer price index is the lowest growth rate since October 2021. So quite a bit to get excited about there. But here on the local front, we had financial results from MTN. Now, I know we're going to be talking in a little while we'll be talking a little more about exactly what's been going on with MTN and indeed the story with Rain yesterday, because remember, MTN are in the process of trying to acquire Telkom. But let's just put the MTN graph up there. And you can see it was quite spectacular, the growth, the share price increase of MTN yesterday. It's come down a long way from March, April. But it's shooting up, and the reason for this was the results for the 6 months to the end of June. It showed that revenue grew better than the market anticipated. Data revenue up 33%. Isn't that interesting? Although the cell phone companies cut their data prices a lot, because of the sheer volume of data that we are using nowadays, and you and I are obviously using quite a lot of data in this conversation, the volume, the revenues are going up. And MTN's data in the 6 months to end June, the revenue up 33%. That's hypergrowth. Services revenue up 13% and fintech revenue up 10%. The headline earnings per share were 46% higher. Return on equity, 24%. They've now got 281 million subscribers. What a business. It really is a company that is moving in the right direction. And I guess with hindsight, you'd have looked back at that 140 Rand a share and think, my goodness, that would have been an opportunity to buy in. Anyway, yesterday, MTN's share price was up by 9%.
It's a big jump, and it's interesting following COVID, obviously, but also just the growth that we generally see in the South African economy that predictors are looking at and hoping for.
Okay, let's talk about Telkom. Big story yesterday that Rain, which is a company only started 6 years ago, wants to merge with Telkom. And Telkom did not issue a SENS announcement, which is interesting. But the share price was up by by more than 6% yesterday. And you can see how Telkom has rebounded from 34 Rand a share. It's now at 47 Rand a share. It started off on the 15th of July when the bid from MTN came in, MTN wanting to buy Telkom, and now getting extra fuel after Rain made its call yesterday that it wants to merge with Telkom and offer an alternative to what has been proposed by MTN. But there you can see the share price. I mean, a nice stock to have owned if you'd bought in July.
Indeed, Alec, and I believe that we're expecting to chat to Paul Harris of Rain and hopefully bring that to the BizNews audience to follow the story. It is a big one.
Just going through the other big movers yesterday, Bidcorp had a good run. Look at that one too. Big jump yesterday. Okay, it only takes it back to where it was earlier in the year, but a 5% increase in that share price, and it's a really big company. And we also had some good moves from some of the retailers. The Fashini Group, TFG, how's that one, Lizzie? You could have bought this under 115 Rand in mid-July. It's now sitting at 133, and a big, big run yesterday. And let's just close off with on the stocks that went up with an increase yesterday by Impala Platinum. Here's an interesting stock. Again, if you're a technical analyst, you'd be looking at that fall and saying, my goodness, this could go really, really low. But then it broke the trend line quite distinctively in early August and seems to be now on a different direction, even though commodity prices generally haven't been doing that great. Lucy, do you want to take us through the main stories that we've got on BizNews right now?
So, Alec, I think we've started touching on the Telkom and Rain story. That was a very, very big one yesterday. And as you mentioned, there wasn't a SENS announcement. And it now looks like we have many quarters for Telkom, Rain being one of them. And as you say, the share price shot up on that. We've got a published piece which was put up yesterday, and we're going to be following on from that. It's going to be fascinating to speak to Paul Harris, just especially given his pedigree in the corporate landscape of South Africa. The other very big one, Alec, is we had a conversation with Sean Pesh of Ranmore, and I know that you were going to have a chat about a market update for the week, and instead discuss the balanced fund ripoff, as he calls it, of 320 billion rand in South Africa, where balanced funds just aren't performing. And his suggestion is take your financial future into your own hands and track it yourself, because these funds aren't delivering and they aren't performing. And I think individuals can very much relate to that if we look at the big funds' performance over the last 5 years even.
He's an interesting guy. He's a professional fund manager. He's been around the block more than once. He knows a lot about this industry. He's used to work for Old Mutual, used to work with Corky Koyman, so he has deep insights. Started Ranmore Funds a couple of decades ago, and as he says in the interview, he's independent. He can say what he believes, and he believes that people are being really ripped off by these balance funds. He gives, just as a little taster, he gives the 10-year returns, and he worked out on a highly conservative basis that a benchmark for balance funds should have given you about 4%, even if you got half of your money in underperforming South African equities. These three big balance funds, which have 100 billion rand each, which means they take more than a billion rand a year in fees from investors. These three funds, two of them produce 2%. So now that's half of just a normal return. The other one, 1%. And they make their own benchmarks, which Sean is most upset about, because he says that that's really just ripping the end out of it by doing it that way. From me, Alec Hogg, cheerio.
Bye for now, and we'll chat to you again on Monday.
Good morning from the Financial Times. Today is Friday, August 12th, and this is your FT News Briefing. U.S. lawmakers are set to hand Joe Biden a legislative victory today. Europe's corporate bond market is in a chill. And speaking of cold, things have gotten frosty between a famous ice cream maker and its corporate parent.
And there has been an almost total breakdown of relations between Unilever and the board of Ben & Jerry's.
I'm Mark Filippino, and here's the news you need to start your day. Today, U.S. lawmakers in the House of Representatives are set to approve a $700 billion package focused on the climate, healthcare, and taxes. It would be a major victory for President Joe Biden and his Democratic Party. The bill is called the Inflation Reduction Act, and it would boost funding for clean energy. Plus, it would allow the government to negotiate the price of certain drugs. It would also establish new taxes for corporations and increase funding to beef up tax enforcement. It's August, and Europeans are on long summer holidays. Americans are squeaking out some summer vacation, too, which means corporate deal-making on both sides of the Atlantic is slow. But this summer, it's slower than usual. To talk about why, I'm joined by the FT's markets editor, Katie Martin. She joins us pretty much every Friday. Hey, Katie.
Hey, how you going?
I'm doing all right. Katie, let's start with the slowdown in Europe. Corporate bonds have pretty much slowed to a stop. Why are we seeing that?
So we're seeing in Europe what we're seeing pretty much everywhere else, which is just that the flow of new deals coming to market, and by this I mean corporate bonds, so companies coming to the bond market and borrowing money, it's just ground to a halt. Now, August is always a dead zone for deals coming to market because Europeans like going on holiday.
For a whole month, in fact, I'm finding.
But anyway, so August is always a dead zone. But even by the standards of a European August, the markets
are just
doing nothing, right? So you look at the year so far, and in European debt capital markets, that's companies raising bonds in the market, issuing bonds, volumes are down 26% from companies. From governments, volumes are down about 40% so far this year compared to the same period last year. So there just are no deals out there. And I genuinely don't know what market, that you know, bankers who do this stuff for a living, what they're doing.
Yeah, so there's no sense of why this is happening?
Well, no, there's a very strong sense for why this is happening, which is the European economy is in a right mess, and it's got every possibility of getting an awful lot worse. Europe is staring down the barrel of not knowing where it's going to get its gas from for the winter. In addition, borrowing costs are just much higher than they used to be because benchmark interest rates have risen quite a lot, and that pushes up borrowing costs for everybody. There's a bit of padding here in the sense that companies globally absolutely feasted on free money in 2020 when central banks everywhere cut rates to nothing because they were trying to save the financial system from disaster. So that means that companies, a lot of them do have actually pretty healthy balance sheets. They don't necessarily need money right now. But even accounting for that, there are just no deals out there.
Okay, Katie, so this is in Europe. What about in the US? The FT has been reporting on a slowdown in the US of new initial public offerings.
Yeah, definitely. And it's not so much an IPO slowdown in the US, it's just an IPO shutdown. Now, what we call equity capital markets bankers, ECM bankers, the people that bring companies to the stock market for the first time, are just unfailingly positive people. Even if everything is terrible, they will look you in the eye and they will say, but there's a pipeline of new deals and it's ready to come and they're really great companies and they're going to come anytime now. They're saying, yeah, this is a really long shutdown and we don't know how long it's going to last. And unless we get some really good marquee deals that just go fantastically in the next couple of months, we're potentially looking at nothing happening until next year. It's really unusual to hear ECM bankers being so kind of downbeat.
Who is affected most by these IPO slowdowns and these corporate bond slowdowns?
Well, in the immediate line of fire, I would say you have the bankers that do these deals for a living. There's, you know, if this dry period is going to settle in for the long haul, then it's difficult to see how these portions of banks can keep churning out the deals and can keep people busy. But certainly for, you know, in the real world, if you like, companies are just going to find the going much harder when they come back to borrow. Everyone's expecting much higher default rates. You know, there's going to be lots of companies out there that aren't able to keep up repayments on the debt. So it's just a much trickier environment for companies to get their hands on the money they need. And we will get that the test of this theory that it's going to be fine. Companies borrowed loads of money in the pandemic. They've padded out their nests. They can see this out. Let's test that theory, shall we? Because I think we might have to.
Katie Martin is the FT's markets editor. She joins us every Friday, but not next Friday because she's going to be on vacation.
Or the Friday after that.
Or the Friday after that. Well,
still going to be on vacation.
Going to miss you, Katie. Thank you for your time.
Okay, no worries.
The American ice cream maker Ben & Jerry's is in a heated dispute with its corporate parent, the British multinational Unilever. Ben & Jerry's has, since its founding, decades ago, focused on environment and social issues as much as profits. So in keeping with its progressive politics, Ben & Jerry's last year announced that it would end its ice cream sales in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. But there was one big problem.
Unilever, the parent company, didn't support this move.
That's the FT's consumer industries correspondent, Judith Evans.
But Ben & Jerry's had the freedom to do this under a very unusual acquisition agreement that dates back to when Unilever bought the company more than 20 years ago. Ben & Jerry's has its own independent board, which has the right to make certain decisions, particularly around kind of the brand and brand values. The Israeli government immediately weighed in and threatened serious consequences for Unilever. Lots of Unilever's own investors, particularly in the US, were really unhappy about this decision.
One big investor who opposed Ben & Jerry's move is the powerful financier Nelson Peltz.
And Peltz, actually, since then, we in the FT revealed that he owns a stake in Unilever and he's joined Unilever's board. So there's a tremendous amount of pressure from very close to home, as well as political pressure from the Israeli government not to allow this to go ahead.
So here's what Unilever does. It decides to sell its Israel business to the local distributor and manufacturer, a guy named Avi Singer. So then Ben & Jerry's goes to court.
The current state of play is that Ben & Jerry's wants an injunction to stop the sale of its Israeli operation to go ahead. Slightly weirdly, Unilever claims that it has been completed, therefore it's impossible to issue such an injunction. But the judge is considering whether to do that as a preamble to the rest of the case.
Now, as we're recording this, there's still no court ruling on whether Ben & Jerry's will get an injunction. But Judith points out something really interesting about this whole dispute. While Ben & Jerry's is famous for being politically progressive, Unilever also positions itself as moral.
And Alan Jope, the current chief executive, has said that he wants all of its brands to have a purpose, which doesn't necessarily have to be environmental, but it needs to be kind of bigger than just like selling soap or whatever. But what's quite ironic about this is Ben & Jerry's has always been very political and it also is very successful. It became last year one of, I think, only 13 Unilever brands to exceed 1 billion euros of annual sales. there's an interesting tension there between a wider company and a single brand, both of which are really quite heavy on the kind of we're doing the right thing.
So if Unilever is going to try and squash this kind of political movement by the company, is Ben & Jerry's actually a good fit for Unilever?
Well, that's a really interesting question. And there has, at this point, been an almost total breakdown of relations between Unilever and the board of Ben & Jerry's, most of whose members are independently appointed under this very unusual acquisition agreement that they have. Unilever has even stopped paying the independent board members, they've said. And Alan Joke, the chief executive of Unilever, has, I think, been asked whether he plans to sell Ben & Jerry's. He says that he doesn't. But it does seem like we have two sort of different ideas of purpose and morality here, which have absolutely come into conflict with one another. It's hard to see how you row back from that.
Judith Evans is the FT's consumer industries reporter. You can read more on all of these stories at FT.com. This has been your daily FT News Briefing. Make sure you check back next week for the latest business news. The FT News Briefing is produced by Sonia Hudson, Fiona Simon, and me, Mark Filippino. Our editor is Jess Smith. We had help this week from Michael Lello, David Da Silva, India Ross, and Gavin Coleman. Our executive producer is Topher Forges. Cheryl Bromley is the FT's global head of audio, and our theme song is by Metaphor Music.